regional countries, which confirmed the intelligence gathered in the field on Israel's anti-Iran activities in the region. According to the new report, senior officials of countries where Israeli undercover experts have been present have been aware of the Israeli military and intelligence presence in their countries, but prefer to keep silent. The project started when Israel was transferred from the United States European Command, EUCOM, to US Central Command, CENTCOM, in order to enable the Tel Aviv regime to carry out its intelligence and military conspiracies in West Asia following the withdrawal of the United States from the region. While some believe the normalization of ties between some Arab states and Israel has laid the groundwork for and provided Tel Aviv with a pretext to conduct its operations close to Iranian borders, others say the U.S. is assigning tasks to Israel to carry out in its stead in the region.
Their main focus is on Iran, and they are having in the region allies like Arab Gulf states and others who are focused on this. And secondly, it's to help the United States, who sees China as a threat because China and Iran's close ties and now their alliance is a threat to U.S. Zionist stability and their control in the region. So I think that what we see here is the move to Central Command is primarily against Iran, but also undergirding that from the United States is Iran's relationship with China.
Iran has shown that it won't stand idly by in the face of foreign aggression. The January 2020 attack on the Ain al-Assad airbase in Iraq housing U.S. troops is one example. Iran carried out the retaliatory missile attack in the aftermath of the U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Iraq's deputy commander of the Popular Mobilization Unit, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, in Baghdad. Iranian officials have, on so many occasions, noted that the Islamic Republic won't tolerate the presence of Israel in the region, highlighting the threats that the Israeli regime poses to the regional nations. Will they heed the warnings? Only time can tell.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on March 10th, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the chairman and members of the Assembly of Experts. The meeting was held at the end of the ninth session of the Assembly. Everyone should know that the environmental protection is not a formal ceremonial issue. Some people think that the issue of the environment has a ceremonial and peripheral status in the country. This is not the case. Protecting the environment is one of the most fundamental and essential tasks in the country and for the organizations of the country. A serious issue in protecting the environment is the issue of water and soil. Many people are unaware of the fact that the water and soil are two great sources of national wealth and two vital provisions for all nations. And in all countries in the globe, these sources should not be used extravagantly. Soil should not be destroyed. Therefore, treating water and soil in a wasteful manner should surely work to the disadvantage of national interest. There are many policies and methods for optimal use of water and soil. Experts are aware of these methods. Those who are specialists in these areas should guide and help officials, and officials should pay attention to this matter. Another issue concerning the protection of the environment is the preservation of wildlife. If we are indifferent towards wildlife and the animals which exist throughout the country, in forests, deserts, and plains, this will certainly jeopardize national interest. Illegal hunting should be taken seriously as well. In the whole Islamic Sharia law, hunting is only allowed when it is done with the purpose of providing food. Otherwise, it is not allowed in any way.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Islamic law has not given permission for other kinds of hunting. When you take a look at Islamic law books, they mention that daily prayers conducted on a hunting trip have been done completely, not done in abbreviated form as on normal trips. In other words, such trips are haram. This is what it means. It signifies that this is a wrong task. This point should receive attention. The issue of wildlife is very important. Another point that is also related to the Environment Protection Organization is preventing the utilization of agricultural lands for other purposes. We have heard that in many cases, agricultural lands in the vicinity of cities and in some plains are used for other purposes. This should be stopped because it is surely to the disadvantage of national interest.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Economic divide.
It's an economic crisis of mammoth proportions. Sri Lanka appears to be in a state of economic freefall. Shortage of fuel, medicines, and basic stuff, along with a foreign currency shortage, has led to protests and social disorder. And now the country is looking for another IMF loan. Hi, I'm Kavitah Wai. The Sri Lankan economic crisis, the topic of today's edition of Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, Sri Lanka facing its worst financial crisis in more than 70 years. Food prices have risen by a record 30% in March alone, grappling with Asia's highest rate of inflation, a currency collapse, and fuel shortages. Then dissatisfaction with the Rajapaksa family, whose members hold several top positions in government. Cabinet of ministers resigned in full, with Sri Lankans protesting, leading to deadly street protests demanding the president's resignation. That's the political crisis of the story. And we will also take a look at the mounting foreign debt. Cash-strapped Sri Lanka has taken short-term loans from India, and China now is looking to the IMF again. Is the Western-backed IMF the source of the economic crisis?
Sri Lanka is in a crisis. Calls from the public and opponents of President Gotabaya Rajapaksa to resign. The reason is Sri Lanka's worsening economic situation. People have held demonstrations for weeks over lengthy power cuts and shortages of gas, food, and other basic goods. Nearly all cabinet ministers and scores of parliament members have left the government over public anger.
And I'm here because it's not enough to just reshuffle the cabinet. We want accountability. It's not just resignation that we want. We want people to take accountability for their actions. We want these leaders to take accountability for their actions.
But Sri Lanka's beleaguered president says that he will not be resigning. Opposition MPs have also rejected his invite to form a national unity government. Rajapaksa has lifted controversial state of emergency measures following further protests. The president had invoked the law on April 1 after protests outside of his house. Parliament Speaker has told Parliament there will be acute food shortages and that the economic crisis is just the beginning.
Yes, I am expecting it to get a lot worse, and unfortunately they are unable to contain it, because the people who created the crisis are very much still in charge of the economic management. So I think it's behaviorally impossible for them to acknowledge that they have made a huge blunder and they have to reverse all these incorrect economic policy.
The economic meltdown in Sri Lanka spiraled as the Sri Lankan rupee plunged to become the world's worst performing currency. Sovereign dollar bonds dropped to trade at deeply distressed levels, while the stock market fell a further 2%. Over the past few months, Sri Lanka has been facing a dire financial crisis on multiple fronts. People have been suffering power cuts of up to 13 hours, massive inflation, and a shortage of food and basic goods.
The situation in Sri Lanka is dire. It's really spiraling out of control unless urgent action is taken. But what can the government do? Well, in the latest push, it is going to try to tame inflation by raising interest rates. Let's take a look at online viewers and see what they had to say about what is happening in that country. Now, this post shows the depth of the problem. Today, I measure inflation at a stunning 68% for the year. The balance of payments crisis is sinking the Sri Lankan economy. The only way to serve the Sri Lankan rupee and to ease the crisis is to install a currency board. Well, taking a look at this particular post, Sri Lanka's currency plunges to the world's worst performing currency, which has led to an economic meltdown, the rupee shedding a third of its value against the dollar as deepening crisis raises the threat of a default. Next, is the Sri Lankan problem just the tip of the iceberg in South Asia? This viewer has said India on guard as Sri Lanka's economy crumbles. Pakistan faces constitutional crisis, which we saw Imran Khan being ousted, and other neighbors are battling uncertainties. Now, this analysis was a result of a tweet. Sri Lanka's political turmoil risks derailing the economy further. It was worth now taking a look at the analysis, and in this introspective was what we picked out as a highlight. In recent political cycles, economic reform agendas have been promptly reversed by the next government, resulting in policy whiplash and macroeconomic damage. This trend must be reversed. All right, our guest joining us for this edition of the Q&A is Bhavani Fonseca. She's a lawyer and senior researcher at the Center for Policy Alternatives, who joins us from Colombo, Sri Lanka. Bhavani Fonseca, welcome. The economic indicators for Sri Lanka are pretty bad. Inflation, power cuts as a result, protests that are happening, political uncertainty. Tell us how you think this island nation has actually gotten to this point. The government says that it's really a result of COVID-19. Do you buy it?
Thank you, Khaled, for having me on the show. And this is in a very unprecedented time in Sri Lanka where we're having a political and economic crisis. It's largely due to the mismanagement and lack of planning from this government. And one can, I think the blame is put on various things, including the pandemic by this government. But it really speaks to not having proper plans, a policy incoherence, and just really inability to address the multiple crises.
All right, we appreciate that. Let's now turn to Professor Manoharan, who joins us. He's the director of the Center for East Asian Studies at Christ University, joining us from Bangalore. Professor Manoharan, welcome. Staying afloat economically for Sri Lanka is something that is going to be very difficult. It is in a tight squeeze. It has only a few options. One of them it has decided to go ahead with is subscribing to the IMF and taking a loan from that institution. But it has done so 16 times before. Isn't the situation that it is in now because of loans from institutions like the IMF?
Okay. So I would say, to be fair to IMF, if we look at the IMF loans generally to countries, they are actually not too much of strings attached, unlike you have the bilateral loans that Sri Lanka either borrows from China or some other countries, where in general IMF goes by the special drawing rights, which Sri Lanka has special drawing rights to around 100 million or so. If you stretch it further, the recently they got the loan to the tune of around 700 million or 900 million to the tune of $1 billion. So this comes with low interest rate, and that is preferable.
It's time now for our Info News section. Lots of economic news that we looked at. First, since the IMF is one of the topics of our program, in this piece of news, it shows how it is hard at work. And in this case, it covers Ukraine, another country falling victim to the IMF debt and political cycle. As is evident, the country is war-torn, and the IMF seems to think that it can help it. Now, moving on to the next topic, U.S. recession alarm bells are ringing off for that to be something in the works. There's no denying it. The Sentry has said that the recession shock is coming. Major U.S. bank is issuing that warning. Bank of America went on to say soaring inflation raises the risk of a major economic downturn. And that is not good news for the U.S. that is experiencing record inflation in that country. On to our next piece of news. Poor people are dying earlier. Bad news for the U.K. Britain's class divides based on this are very much alive. Now, according to this, 4 out of 10 male deaths in the most deprived areas are premature. It's worth dwelling on that fact, really. 40% of all male deaths in the most deprived areas are actually avoidable, compared to just 18% in the most affluent regions of the UK. And our final pick covers France. France held the first round of the elections. At this point, it is obvious that there's a tight, not as tight a race between Marine Le Pen and the current or incumbent president, Emmanuel Macron. We're going to take a look at 5 years of Macron and its economy, where, according to the source, has trickled down in drips and drops. That's going to be the topic of our next program. However, we'd like to hear from you for our future programs. If you have a topic that you'd like for us to cover in your part of the world, please send us an email and let us know.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The Sri Lankan economic crisis is one of the most severe cases when it comes to an economy that is faltering, it seems like, in almost every facet, which is what we are going to look at in this in-depth section. First of all, Sri Lanka is trapped in spiraling debt. There's no question about that. When it comes to the top lenders, here they are. You're looking at international sovereign bonds coming in at 36.4%. The Asian Development Bank, ADB, 14.6%. Next up, Japan, 10.9%. And then you have China at 10.8%. But here's the big one. The big one here, as you can see, covers Sri Lanka's foreign debt in terms of the top lenders in this area. That includes institutions like the IMF. And we're going to get into that a little bit more. Let's now focus on the foreign exchange crisis that it's experiencing. Obviously, that is also huge. Its foreign exchange reserves actually saw a drop of 70% in the past 2 years. This is said to be the reason the country is struggling to pay for essential imports. For how could they? The country has only $2 billion in foreign currency reserves, and yet the total debt repayment is $7 billion for the year 2022. That's a huge difference. Now, to give you an idea about how bad the inflation is, here are some prices for everyday goods. Let's take a look at this. It's in their currency, but we're going to focus on the percentage. For rice, 64%, onions, 60%, and then potatoes, 74.8%. That's according to the figures coming from the Central Bank of Sri Lanka. So there you can see just a snapshot of basic items, as we just mentioned there. Now, what happens with economic indicators that are now so bad? In one simple word, chaos. You have fuel supply shortages. That, this is a snapshot again, leads to power cuts, which then impacts manufacturing, and then you have shortages in things like paper, if you can believe that. That's just one example. Think about it. The country has actually ran out of paper. So that's how desperate that country is when it comes to its economic crisis. Now, the basic rules of economics comes into play here, and it's evident when you have expenditures that are greater than the income of the country, that means that they're borrowing more than they're producing. That's just basic economics, and that is the case with Sri Lanka. Now, you can't ignore what the COVID-19 pandemic actually did to its economy, just like many other nations. For COVID, there were the Easter bombings that cut tourism revenues for the government, and then in turn, they had to use foreign reserves to pay off their debt. In the case of foreign reserves in 2018, it had $6.9 billion, which has now gone down to $2.2 billion for the year 2022. And that's according to an IMF briefing. And then you're looking at the decrease, for example, in GDP for 2020, 3.5% had declined, and the fiscal deficit climbed to 11.1%. And finally, something that many don't know about Sri Lanka and its agriculture industry, it was an initiative that the government set forward in doing. It was an effort to move towards organic farming. The government banned the use of chemical fertilizers because of that bad decision. The steep drop in crop yields was the result of that. And that obviously made the country then become more reliant on foreign imports. And of course, once that happens, one obvious outcome is that foreign reserves will even decrease by more. But now, you have a newly elected finance minister. I mean, really new. He's been in the job for only days now. And this is what he intends to do about the economy, at least one of the steps he's going to take.
Basically, if we can restore the supply chain, if we can provide these necessities on time, we can get our tourism back on track. That will bring dollars in. We need to protect our export industry. We need to protect our supply chain. So if we can do that, I feel if we can, I mean, the numbers are still being worked out. Yeah. I just taken over a day or two ago. But a rough figure is probably we need about $3 billion infusion during the next 3 to 6 month time, from now to 3 to 6 months, for us to meaningfully come out of it.
Okay, $3 to $6 billion is what he said there. All right, let me bring back our guests in order to get a breakdown on this. We have Professor Mona Haran, who's the director of the Center for East Asian Studies
at Christ University, who joins us from Bangalore. So, Professor Manoharan, looking at soaring inflation, you have power cuts, you have different facets of the economy that have broken down, which has led to the protests that we have seen, and there have been deadly protests requesting the government to step down, in which the parliament has actually resigned en masse. What are we looking at when it comes to this economic crisis for Sri Lanka?
Okay, I would say it is not just about COVID-19. There are five other reasons I would point out. Number one, the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war. So if you put together COVID and Ukraine war, of course, COVID is one of the reasons. But if you put Russian-Ukraine war and COVID-19, you would see the rising fuel prices like petroleum and diesel and things like that. And then you have this cooking oil the cooking oil prices. And then you have fallen tourism, foreign remittances, fallen FDI and so on and so forth because of this together COVID-19 and Russian-Ukraine war. This is reason number one. Reason number two, the very security situation. Sri Lanka came out of ethnic war in 2009. So economy was slowly coming back, but by then you had in 2019, April, Easter attacks. Put together again, this impacted Sri Lanka's tourism industry, impact on FDIs and foreign remittances.
All right, very well. Thank you for that. Let's bring in Bhavani Fonseca, lawyer and senior researcher at the Center for Policy Alternatives, who joins us from Colombo, Sri Lanka. Bhavani Fonseca, the IMF is the focus of my question. It's known to give out loans, but then you have political attachments that has been cited based on their track record with countries, but it also creates this cycle of debt. Please explain that to us and why these IMF loans are so controversial, especially when it comes to the case of Sri Lanka, which appears to, again, want to opt for a loan from the IMF.
Well, I mean, this is also a concern that IMF and other financial assistance, loans, raises a lot of issues in terms of sovereignty and what it means to Sri Lanka and Sri Lankans. And this is something we need to really look at because a lot of Sri Lanka's debt is linked to getting into these loan schemes that has got us into this problem.
Sri Lanka has faced a series of problems in recent years which compounded the country's structural issues. In 2018, the country faced a constitutional crisis. The following year, hundreds of people at churches and luxury hotels were killed in the 2019 Easter bombings. And from 2020 onwards, it has been grappling with the COVID-19 pandemic. The crisis has battered the economy, as well as leading to mounting foreign debts, rising inflation, and economic mismanagement by the government. Facing a massive deficit, the government slashed taxes in a doomed attempt to stimulate the economy, but the move backfired, instead hitting government revenue. That prompted rating agencies to downgrade Sri Lanka to near default levels. That meant that the country lost access to overseas markets. The South Asian nation no longer has enough dollar reserves to buy essential items like food, fuel, in order to power vehicles or even generate electricity.
The reason for the shortages is not a shortage of any commodity, but the shortage of dollars. And the shortage of dollars have few reasons. One is the price control on dollar, because that's when you have a price control, it incentivizing importers to import more and discouraging the exporters because they are paying a lower price. Second is, I would say, the excessive money printing or quantitative easing, because when you add more liquid or more money into the system, those money chases behind imports.
To stay afloat and get itself out of the economic quagmire, Sri Lanka has few options outside of turning to the International Monetary Fund, but the island nation has so far received 16 IMF loans since it joined the financial institution in 1950. But the IMF loans come with political attachments. The loans are said to create a cycle of debt that forces the country to just pay that debt. Austere loan conditions reduce economic growth and deepen and prolong financial crises, creating severe hardships for the poorest people in borrowing countries and strengthening local opposition to the IMF.
When it comes to Sri Lanka, it has been the victim of what many don't realize, and that is the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. But what does the IMF have to do with Sri Lanka's economic crisis? Well, let us count the ways. First of all, it is interesting to note that the island nation has so far received 16 IMF loans since it joined the financial institution in 1950. It is now going to go for another loan, which could spell more disaster for the country. But why are IMF loans deemed to be bad? They're supposed to help countries who are in need of money to pay off their debt. But the truth is otherwise. Just listen to what renowned American author John Perkins, best known for his book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, has said about institutions like the World Bank and the IMF.
They buy a very, very cheap debt on these countries, and then they go back to the countries and say, hey, you've got to pay us a lot of money, and we'll litigate against it because we're holding this paper, and we're going to go after you. And if you can't pay in cash, then pay in resources or pay in cheap labor markets or whatever. We weren't helping the poor get better lives. We were helping the rich get richer. We were helping the United States colonize a great deal of the world, with U.S. corporations primarily.
There's no shortage of insights into the inner workings of these institutions and the destructive role that they play in a country's economy. Here's another example, describing this time, by an Australian journalist, writer, scholar, and documentary filmmaker. He, however, puts the blame on the U.S. He has said there are many examples of the United States using the World Bank and International Monetary Fund to shore up supports for foreign policy, naming the first Persian Gulf War as an example. In his undertaking of third world debt, taken up in his documentary War by Other Means, he revealed that the money owed to the rich world by the third world is far greater than the aid or charitable donations they receive. Pilger has stated that the multinationals' global domination demonstrates how the West has increased its stranglehold on poor countries by using the might of the IMF, World Bank, and World Trade Organization to control their economies. To conclude here, if you are in debt, stay away from these institutions. You may end up more than you bargained for. That does it for me.
My final thoughts, it's sad to see that Sri Lanka is giving the IMF serious thoughts for getting another loan, which at this point, it seems like they're going to go ahead with it. The IMF said it was very concerned about Sri Lanka's ongoing economic crisis and that it had started technical level engagements with the finance ministry and the central bank. What Sri Lanka needs to do, however, is to have some of its debt erased or refinanced, not to go to the IMF or the World Bank to have that refinanced. Because as we know, the debt spiral will come into play, and of course, it's the poor people who are going to get the short end of the stick. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you on board. Please send us your comments and questions. We always appreciate them. From Mikovit Hapley, it's goodbye until next time.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. We have been fasting for some 2 weeks. By the way, we have tasted the sweetness of worship. One of the factors that prevent tasting the sweetness is the right of people. There are three rights in Islam: the right of the self, the right of God, and the right of people. The right of the self means we are not allowed to wrong ourselves by wasting the lifetime. We should use the talents that God has gifted us correctly. If we do not fulfill the right of the self, we can compensate it by repenting. The right of God includes acts like daily ritual prayers, fasting, and other obligatory acts, and also refraining from forbidden acts. There are many narrations that God will pardon his right if the individual repents honestly and does not have time to compensate. But the right of people is very important in Islam, and one cannot get rid of them by mere repenting. Part of this right includes financial issues, while the other part includes spiritual issues such as dignity and honor of individuals. This right should be compensated exactly as it has been violated. In other words, God will never forgive the violated right of people unless we get back the money that we owe to somebody or retaliate for defaming an individual. The right of people is so important that if we are indebted to someone and he demands it while we are in daily ritual prayer, we have to stop the prayer and spend his debt and then continue the prayer. 1,400 years ago, Imam Sajjad, peace upon him, son of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, has mentioned the rights of everything and everyone, which should be observed by the faithful. Without observing these rights, we cannot taste the sweetness of worship, and consequently, we won't reach high degrees of servitude of God. Undoubtedly, the Prophet and his progeny, the Ahlul Bayt, are the best role models for mankind. Familiarity with their characteristics and pondering over their practice and behavior demonstrates the sublime and purposeful life. Imam Hassan, peace upon him, was asked on the reason of prescribing fasting. The Imam answered, "God has prescribed fasting in order that the rich taste hunger and spend the surplus of their wealth to the poor." Imam Hassan, peace upon him, was very kind and forgiving. One day a man had come to Medina from Syria. He found Imam Hassan and started insulting the Imam as a result of negative propaganda of the Umayyad rulers
that had spread across Syria. When he got tired of insulting, Imam Hassan, peace upon him, cast him an affectionate look, and after reciting a few ayahs on pardoning others, told the man, "O man, we are ready for any kind of service to you." Then the Imam asked him, "Are you from Syria?" The man answered, "Yes." Imam Hassan said, "I know why you have behaved this way, but now that you are lonely in our city, if you need anything, I will help you and I'm ready to receive you at my home." The Syrian man never thought to face such kind of overlooking, so he was changed, as he said, "At that time, I wish the ground had swallowed me so that I couldn't have behaved so brazenly. Hassan and his father had been the worst people in my heart, but now I don't love anyone more than them." Let's continue the laws of fasting. One of the things that nullify fasting is ascribing untrue issues and words to God, prophets, and imams. This will nullify fasting both in verbal and written form. Thus, one should be very careful about narrating hadith and words of the prophets and infallible imams. Yet, one can narrate hadith if he's not sure if they are true or not. But it is better to mention the reference. Ascribing untrue narrations and words to jurisprudence and ulema is forbidden and a great sin, but it does not nullify fasting. Another act which nullifies fasting is to dip the head completely in water. If this act is done deliberately, it will nullify fasting. So, if the person is forced to dip his head or he does it out of negligence, his fasting is correct. If he dips half of his head and then dips another half, his fasting is correct. Meanwhile, pouring water on the head with a dish or shower does not nullify fasting. If one doubts that his head was completely dipped in water, his fasting is correct. If he puts the whole head in water unintentionally, he should take it out as soon as he notices.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The French presidential election was trending as an easy victory for the incumbent, Emmanuel Macron, until the unrest in Ukraine began. Macron's insistence on long-term sanctions for Russia exploded already high inflation. That's resulted in widespread hardship, resentment, and tough assessments of Macron's economic record.
It's clear that Macron has not improved the quality of life for the French. He's not responsible for all the problems he's had to deal with, but it's clear there's a big difference between what he's promised and what he's delivered.
The French election may come down to this. Who do voters feel will protect the average person from the economically explosive effect of long-term sanctions on Russia over the unrest in the Ukraine? It's not a question the mainstream media wants to discuss, but it is top of mind for the average person. Polls show the race is now a dead heat, with a soaring Marine Le Pen of the National Rally taking an opposite tack, promising to oppose Russia energy sanctions
which are wreaking havoc with gas, heating, and food prices. As the challenger, Le Pen doesn't have a record to defend, and she's escaping anger over the economic crisis.
Macron has absolutely not done a good job on protecting our purchasing power. The middle class feels that Macron has contempt for the middle class, and they also feel a great contempt for the neoliberal globalist banker Macron.
Macron's far-right economic policies provoked the unprecedented yellow vest protests in 2018. He only made minor concessions before turning to brutal repression, and the coronavirus crisis only aggravated economic inequalities.
Macron needed to go much further in his efforts to reduce prices. It's unbearable to go to the supermarket these days. Even people who make an honest salary say that they are having trouble.
Abstention may reach record highs because many voters wonder if Le Pen would actually deliver on her populist economic promises. Her party has historically been aligned with neoliberalism as well. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
Ramadan 2022 is underway, and Muslims are fasting from dawn to dusk. But to those who are fasting for the first time, it is going to be the most different and memorable Ramadan. Tehran municipality has invited more than 800 first-time fasters to this iftar meal to celebrate their religious coming of age. In Islam, a person would be responsible to perform their religious tasks when they reach puberty. And that's when they're duty-bound to fast during Ramadan.
We invited 850 kids today to teach them that fasting is more than a duty, but a bliss. Here, they learn about the benefits of fasting when it comes to regulating their digestive system. And more importantly, they learn that fasting polishes their soul as it boosts their spirituality.
In Muslim societies, Ramadan is known as the month of God, and Muslims believe they're invited to a divine party. That's why in the holy month, humanitarian activities and charity works get supercharged, with people trying to do whatever they can to help the needy.
Muslims view Ramadan as not just a time to refrain from eating and drinking. They regard it as a chance to push the limits on humanity and become the best version of yourself as a human being. And that's what organizers here try to teach first-time fasters. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Tensions are high in the occupied territories amid a recent increase in crackdown on Palestinians. Regime forces attacked worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque on Friday. Scores of Palestinians were wounded in the clashes. Around 400 people were also arrested. Muslim nations as well as resistance groups have condemned Tel Aviv. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation called on the international community to force Israel to end its aggression. Iran said Friday's events in Muslims' third holiest site show that the Palestinian resistance is alive and thriving, and Israel is in a state of desperation. Analysts believe that Tel Aviv is intentionally increasing tensions to take control of Al-Aqsa Mosque.
I think that the Israelis are escalating the whole situation in the West Bank in order, at least in Jerusalem, in order to control the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And that was the aim for the settlers groups who announced many times that they wanted, to get into Al-Aqsa Mosque and practice some of their own religion kind of practices. If they did such an act, definitely that would lead to a war.
The clashes came after 3 weeks of deadly tensions in the occupied territories. Tel Aviv has deployed more forces to the West Bank and conducted raids and house searches there almost every day. This has resulted in the deaths and injuries of dozens of Palestinians. Israel's Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has given Israeli forces a free hand in their operations. Many believe that the latest escalation could turn into an uprising or a new intifada in Palestine.
Palestinian experts are warning that they could return back, let's say, to more clashes, more escalation. These killings by the Israeli forces and this escalation could any time turn into an uprising or an intifada. No one can tell, especially that the Israelis are saying they will not end their operation. It will continue.
Palestinians have also increased their operations in response to the crackdown. Since March 22nd, they have conducted several stabbing and shooting operations, including one in Tel Aviv, leaving 14 Israelis dead. The increase in anti-Israel operations in the occupied territories show that Palestinians have reached a conclusion that they should decide their own fate, especially after several Arab countries normalized ties with Israel. Palestinians believe that resistance against occupation is the only way they have to achieve their goals.
People in the besieged Gaza Strip held a rally following the Friday prayers to express their solidarity with Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Angry protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and vowing to sacrifice their lives for the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Earlier, the Israeli regime forces stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds, injuring more than 150 worshippers during the second Friday of the fasting holy month of Ramadan. Hamas movement has warned the Israeli regime against violations at Al-Aqsa Mosque.
We are prepared to wage wars for the sake of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. We will continue to the equation of arms for arms and blood for blood, and that Al-Quds is a red line that must not be crossed. The Israeli occupation will bear full responsibility for any repercussions as a result of its attacks against the worshippers. We are ready for all scenarios to stop this enemy and protect our people.
Protesters in the Gaza Strip vowed to increase their solidarity with Al-Quds until the removal of all Israeli violations in the holy city.
The Palestinian people are united for the sake of Al-Quds, and we will not abandon Al-Aqsa Mosque. We will fight for the sake of Al-Quds and sacrifice our lives for it.
The Israeli regime has stepped up its deadly acts of aggression in Al-Quds since the beginning of Ramadan. Palestinian resistance factions warned the Israeli regime of dire consequences if Israeli forces continue to attack Al-Quds.
The Israeli is sending a clear message to the Zionist enemy that it must understand that we will not sit idle while it attacks Al-Quds. The Zionist enemy is playing with fire, and it will only explode in its face.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque is Islam's third holiest site and has been under Israeli occupation since 1967.
Palestinians in the besieged coastal enclave say that they will use all forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Al-Quds. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The latest second-round polls in France continue to show that Emmanuel Macron's once comfortable lead has vanished to make the race a dead heat. The mainstream media's insistence on talking about Islamophobia and xenophobia has already produced near-record abstention, but the unrest in Ukraine has forced real issues back to the fore. First the Great Recession, then the Age of Austerity, then the Yellow Vest Civil War, then the coronavirus era, and now an era of Russian sanctions? Devoted Europhile Macron remains committed to a long-term blockade of Russia, which requires years of economic suffering for the average household. Analysts say that voters may prefer Le Pen's France-first insistence that any Russia sanctions not bankrupt French homes and businesses.
She's a nationalist, and she's protectionist in some way. She's also protective. She has understood that it was important to sound as someone that would be here to take care of electors. It's whether it's for good or bad, but a lot of French people want to feel that they have a protective hand in government.
Le Pen has also promised to pull out of NATO's command center to restore French independence. Macron is relying on a demonization campaign of the National Front, just like in 2017. When the number two reason people voted for Macron was to block them from coming to power.
He is, in a way, a president by default. The number one paradox of this campaign is that, indeed, we've had 5 years of a president who's managed to be disliked by almost everybody and who yet is favorite to be reelected.
Back when he thought victory was assured, Macron promised to raise the retirement age to 65 this fall. That may cost him key older and left-wing votes. He's backtracking and saying that he's now willing to listen to the ideas and desires of voters.
Do left-wing voters believe Macron's claims that he's now willing to govern by consensus? Does France view Le Pen differently after 5 years of Macronism? The winning candidate may be the one who proves that they have changed the most since the very different year of 2017. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Arms trafficking at Italy's main sea dispatch points is ongoing in breach of international and Italian laws. Dockers have found U.S.-made tanks in the hold of a Saudi ship docked at the port of Genoa. Our correspondent Max Civili has this report from Rome.
Italian ports have often been central to international arms trafficking over the past years. Cargos of weapons destined for war-torn countries have been intercepted in various seaports, including those of Livorno, Naples, and Gioia Tauro. On Wednesday, dockers belonging to the autonomous port workers collective CALP found tanks in the hold of the Saudi Arabian ship Bahri Jeddah, which is moored in Italy's northern port of Genoa. CALP dockers have taken photos of the weapons placed on board the ship and published them on the collective's website.
The ship carries weapons and ammunition. We spotted M1 Abrams tanks already armed, produced in the US. On the deck of the ship, there are also containers full of ammunition and explosives in plain sight. It is extremely dangerous and against international and Italian laws.
About 10 days ago, CALP dockers, together with rights associations and pacifist movements, staged a protest demanding the port authority more transparency on ships' cargoes transiting in Genoa. Dockers have said the demands have not yet been addressed.
These ships carrying cargo of arms and explosives are not just operating in breach of international and Italian laws. Cargo of this sort is extremely dangerous for the dockers and for thousands of people living in the surroundings of the port of Genoa. In addition to that, ships are moored near a chemical warehouse and an oil depot. You can imagine the safety implications of that.
The Weapon Watch Observatory has also found that the number of Italian aircraft carriers that are transporting weapons towards Poland has dramatically increased over the past weeks. Rome has been sending tons of arms and humanitarian aid to Ukraine since the start of the conflict there.
The arms industry in Italy is prospering. 10 years ago, Rome was the 10th largest weapons producer in the world. Today, it stands as the 6th. Furthermore, following the start of the conflict in Ukraine, the Mario Draghi government has honored a pledge made to NATO a few years ago, rising military spending from 1.4 to 2% of GDP by 2028. Max Civili, Rome.
Millions of EU citizens are really starting to feel the pinch. Inflation in the 19-country eurozone is currently at 7.5%. The European Central Bank, ECB, wants inflation to be at just below 2%. It means the cost of living is out of control.
The impact of the war on the economy will depend on how the conflict evolves, on the effect of current sanctions, and on possible further measures.
On Thursday, the ECB said energy prices have increased by 45% in the past 12 months. Business and consumer confidence has fallen through the floor due to the conflict in Ukraine and sanctions against Russia. There are major supply issues. The cost of living is rising, but wages are not, according to the ECB. We have been speaking to EU citizens.
We have also a lot of refugees in Poland, so it's also a huge problem now for our country, for the healthcare system and every other area.
We have to take the car, we're trying to take everybody at the same place and try to share with other peoples, and of course everything in the food also. I mean, it's a big problem, yeah.
When I drive with a car or something and the prices went so high, as a student I cannot pay it.
If the Ukrainian conflict continue, there will be problem because Russian and Ukraine are two of the most important food producers, so there will be problem about food price.
And as a business person, are you worried about losing your business?
Yeah, it's stopping. If you don't have the parts to
construct your thing.
The next